Hi, welcome to Info Dumpies. My name's Brianne. I'm autistic, I have ADHD, my pronouns are she, her, and I think if I were an alien race from Star Trek, I think I would be a Klingon.
Hi, I'm Violet, I have ADHD, my pronouns are she, her, and my favorite Star Trek character is Kira from Deep Space Nine, because she's hot, and she's cool and I like her.
Yeah, I was going to say, she's more than just hot, she's like, very good.
Oh, yeah. She's just good. Like, all around. Good character. Very cool. I also really like Odo. Odo's like a close second for me, I think.
And as you guess from today, from our intros, we're going to be talking about the Industrial Revolution.
Yes.
Yes. No.
And taxes.
Today is a beginner's guide to Star Trek, meaning if you are Star Trek curious and you've wanted to start watching Star Trek, but you're intimidated by just how much fucking stuff there is, 60 years of content, there's some starting points. Now, is all of this my opinion? Yes. Does all of this mean I'm correct in my opinions? When it comes to Star Trek, I will brook no dissidence. I don't want to hear that you don't agree with me, basically, when it comes to Star Trek. This is my oldest special interest.
Since I've known you, I think the thing that I've heard you talk about the most in terms of media that you like is Star Trek. And it's the one that I can tell that you get the most excited about.
Yeah, like I am not someone, unless I'm having an autistic meltdown, not a lot of stuff will make me cry easily. My crying is very contextual. Crying is usually like I'm overloaded, but I will happy cry seeing a trailer for just about anything Star Trek related. It doesn't even have to be new. You could play a Star Trek 4 movie trailer to me, and I might start tearing up because I love Star Trek that much.
Yeah. So for context, if y'all remember when I like teared up during my episode about forestry mascots.
Yeah. Why watch Star Trek? It is a celebration of diversity. It is something that has always challenged societal norms, discrimination, and that's by design. There's a quote from Gene Roddenberry, which I'm not going to do verbatim, but basically saying that humanity will be at its best when we not only learn to tolerate each other's differences, but to cherish them, because that's how we as the human race will succeed. And that is, of every good Star Trek show, the ethos that they follow.
Hell yeah, so, that's a really good ethos.
Yeah, so growing up in a home where I was raised by fundamentalists who were, you know, it was a mixed ethnicity home, and a lot of the fundamentalism made us, you know, a self-hating family in a sense. And I was actively told I shouldn't learn about people different than I am. Star Trek offered me a way to learn that differences are good and people different from me are not evil, that my family and their lack of media literacy didn't understand I was absorbing. So I could do a whole episode on what the fuck are conservatives getting out of Star Trek, because I still don't goddamn understand. But I truly would not be the person that you all hear making podcasts today if it wasn't for Star Trek. It imagines different ways of being as a culture that don't rely on exploitation. Star Trek is a post-scarcity world. There is no money. People don't have to have a job. They do the labor that they want. Everyone is valued. Everyone is important. And I think that's beautiful. And I think it's worth watching. It is the birthplace of so many modern sci-fi tropes that we have today. If you scroll back a few episodes, I talk where it's the birthplace of like fanfic shipping and slash fic.
Spark.
Yeah, and fandom as we know it. If you like, you know, watching fan cam videos, you can thank Star Trek for that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, no, remember in that episode back in the 70s, they were making videos to music, shipping the guys and needing very expensive equipment and lots of shit to do all of this. And you would just sit at a convention and watch people's fan videos.
Hell yeah. Yeah, I had forgotten that you had talked about that part of it too. But it really is like so influential. And I think the representation of like diversity in the show is so vast. I've been trying to think of a way to use this pun that I thought of for like the past like 5 minutes, and I cannot genuinely think of a way to use it, but bitrectual.
That's what I am. Happy Pride.
Yeah, yeah. Brienne's bitrectual, and I'm sure you feel represented.
I do. And my next point about why I watch Star Trek is that so many people feel seen in every series in so many different ways that it genuinely changes lives.
Yeah.
I feel seen in every series. There's someone that I feel not only is my neurodivergence represented, but like there are several times where it's like, ah, you come from a mixed ethnicity home and you're not one thing enough for one group and you're not one thing enough for another group, or your sexuality isn't understood, or just every way. Every Star Trek series has a character I can identify with.
Yeah, and so, same for me as well. Like,
yeah,
Dax is also one of my favorite characters. Like, honestly, Dax, Odo, and Kira, like, obviously I like Deep Space Nine, so those are like my top three. But I really like Dax in that Dax represents a sort of breaking of the connection between presentation and gender identity in a way that really resonates with me. And as soon as I understood how trills work, let me know if I get something wrong, by the way. I'm sure you'll let me know, but
you'll know.
But yeah, as soon as I understood how trills work, I was like, oh, this feels like very much like a trans experience to a degree.
Yeah. And so, yeah, if you've been interested in Star Trek, even if you haven't, I think it's just wonderful. I think especially for autistic people, because every Trek has autistic coded characters that are not just tolerated, but valued for the very things that make them different. And I think a lot of the boundaries I have around friendship and the way I relate to people, I actually developed because I saw those healthy relationships in Star Trek. I am going to talk about different starting points for someone who might be interested in getting into Star Trek.
Hell yeah, that sounds great.
Again, these are my opinions, but I'm right.
Yes.
I have been watching Star Trek so long, I can't actually tell you the first time I watched Star Trek. I was born and it was just on. My biological father would, for a long time, would set the VHS to record reruns of the original series at like 1 or 2 in the morning whenever they came on. Did that until he had the entire original series on VHS. Made special sleeves for the cassettes that had art and episode descriptions.
Oh, wow.
On each of them. And from the time I was born, those were just in a row in a shelf under our TV in the living room.
Yeah.
So
I'm just imagining you popping out the womb with like the live long and prosper hand sign going.
Yeah, yeah.
And like,
your
first word was con.
Yeah, like and on the other side of my family, my Puerto Rican grandma loves Star Trek. Loves Star Trek. Don't know why she didn't absorb any of the messages, but she loved it.
Yeah, maybe she's just like looking at the people in tight uniforms.
For Captain Picard, for sure. She's very much into Captain Picard. Also, Captain Sisko, she was very much into.
I could see that.
Yeah, my Nana was very open about that.
Maybe she was bitrectual as well.
No, I don't think so. But if there was a man she thought was sexy, I've been rewatching Stargate with James, and I just laugh because the guy I thought was handsome in that show, my Nana also thought was handsome. So she felt very open to just go, ooh, in the middle of the show when he did something. I was like, it is genetic. I come by this honestly. But okay, as of a year ago, and more Star Trek has come out since then, because we are in a weird Trek renaissance, a grand total number of hours of Star Trek content was about 837.5 hours.
Sheesh. That's a lot.
This equates to 34.9 days.
Wow.
Full days. Without sleep is how long it would take to play all of the Star Trek that exists right now. So it is, it's overwhelming.
Yeah, I know when I first started with Star Trek, which is shortly after I started dating you, to be clear, I am also by Trek Shule in the sense that I've watched a little bit of two different series, basically mostly Deep Space Nine and some of the original series. And I watched some of the original series with my dad growing up, but just like random episodes here and there. And that's what, where my dad's like interest in Star Trek was in the original series pretty much. And anytime it was on, he would be watching it, but he never really talks about it at all. Although I should talk to my dad about Star Trek more. Anyway,
it's Coco Melon for a certain flavor of autistic person.
Yeah.
He was
self-soothing.
Yeah.
My dad's an electrical engineer, so I think he liked the science aspect of it.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, Brianne showed me Deep Space Nine and had me jump in there, and I think that was a good starting point for me.
Yeah. So I'm going to list some options for starting points. I will not be listing any of the shows that came out from Star Trek Discovery forward, not because I hate new Star Trek stuff, because there's a big camp that hates all of the recent stuff. I think it's delightful. I'm of the mindset, kind of like with coffee, even bad Trek is still Trek.
Sure.
Yeah. And I don't think all of this new Star Trek has been bad, to be clear. If Star Trek still used to accept spec scripts from just anyone, you could send a script in and they might turn it into an episode. If they were still doing that when Lower Decks was on, they would ask me to stop sending stuff. I love Lower Decks so much.
They should start doing that again, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. So, the franchise began in 1966. It was 60 years.
Whew,
60 years of shit. So,
my God.
If you're intimidated, it makes sense. Each person will have their preferences for how to start a series, so I'm going to do my best to talk about the shows I think serve as at least decent starting points. I am talking about shows that came out when things were more episodic, because a lot of the serialized ones that have come out on streaming first really do rely on you having some background knowledge.
Yeah, that makes
a lot of
sense.
That's the only reason. Like, the reason I'm not recommending them is not because I don't think the shows are good, but because the style of writing for TV has changed so much since then that I don't think they're as good as starting points.
That makes a lot of sense.
So for each show I mention, I'll try to give an idea of what person might like to start with that show, a brief summary of the show as a whole, some pros of the series, and some cons of a series.
I love you.
Oddly enough, though, the Wrath of Khan movie isn't on this list, though it's one of the best Star Trek movies, because I do think you need the backstory to really appreciate it. So ironically enough, that's not on here, but it's a good one.
I think you're right on the nose on that, because I saw that. That was like one of the first Star Trek things I ever saw growing up was that movie. And I was like, I don't know what the fuck is going on.
Yeah,
Dad.
You're like, who is this man in the deep V-neck?
Yeah, why is he wearing furs in space? This doesn't make any sense.
What the hell is happening? Why is he being weird to the small Russian lad?
Yeah, why does he have that mullet?
It's an excellent movie if you know what happened up until then.
Exactly.
So we're gonna go in chronological order, not chronology of the universe in the show, but of when they came out in our real non-fictional Earth time.
Release order,
yes. So the original series, series, who should start here? I think this is for completionists only. If you're the kind of person who has a hard time starting something at a different starting point, you want to watch from the very first of something to the very end of something, you are the only person I think should start with the original series. Even though this is the birthplace of the franchise, it's a lot like reading classical literature. Yes, it's foundational and worth your time, but maybe it's not what you'd reach for when you want something relaxing and engaging to read or watch.
I totally get that. There's a lot of like video game series, like just to relate to my own experiences, that like for Dark Souls, for example, yes, you could start with Demon Souls, but you should not. You should absolutely
not.
You should start with probably Elden Ring, because that one is really the most cohesive in terms of teaching the player how to play. Right. And then, you know, you go back to the other ones, probably finishing, honestly, with Demon Souls to understand where it all came from. But that game doesn't tell you shit about fuck. So you really need the context. I completely understand.
And like some episodes are incredible. Some of them really are and form a lot of the tropes we have in sci-fi today. But I'll be honest with you, like 2/3 of them just have like a rogue evil computer or a sentient lasagna creature with babies or a crystalline entity or something or some remix of those two. There are, if you do want to watch the original series, but you don't want to commit to the whole thing, you at least want to dip your toe in. If you look up best episodes of Star Trek, the original series, every single one of those lists is pretty much the same, like, five episodes listed that are just really good television.
Hell yeah.
And it's episodic, meaning there's, like, an alien or planet of the week, issue of the week, so it's not like you're going to miss a whole bunch of overarching storylines. When I say episodic versus serial, just in case anyone is unclear on those, in TV writing, it used to be that when there was no means of recording or staying up to something if you missed it, people would drop off of a show because you couldn't go stream it. You know, right. VHS recorders weren't a thing. They needed to have a show that if someone had to miss a week or two, they could still watch it if it happened to be on at a time they could watch it again. Missing an episode wouldn't mean now you're thrown off and don't know what the fuck's happening.
Exactly.
They used to do that because the nature of how fleeting a TV episode was, you had to plan on people missing things.
Oh, that makes a lot more sense now that I think about, like, just how episodic it was. You really did not need the full context
you
behind the entire series.
You didn't need full context of anything. And then they will re-explain things. So, like, they'll re-explain how Vulcans work in some regards. They'll re-explain these other things because they're just saying, hey, you might just be jumping in here and that's fine.
Right, right, right. They'll do, like, the, as a Vulcan who does not feel emotions, you must not understand.
Yeah.
Right, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. So you'll notice that when VHS players became popular, more serialized storytelling became popular. Because you could miss a week, but people had the means to record it.
Record it. Yep.
Yeah. In case they missed it and it was a show they loved.
But Brienne, okay, that's piracy. You wouldn't download a car. No, I'm just kidding.
I would. I would fucking do it in a heartbeat,
yeah,
100%. If I could. Yeah.
I would download a car, a
starship.
I don't even need
the car. I'll just do it. Fuck you. I'll download the car.
Yeah, exactly. I'll download five cars. Fuck you.
I don't even need it. I'll give them away. So, brief summary of the original series. The crew of the Starship Enterprise, which is a flagship spaceship and a member of the Federation of Planets, goes on scientific missions to explore space and meet new alien life. The beautiful thing is they tell you exactly what the show's about in the little intro monologue. To boldly go where no one has gone before.
Says it all in the tin. Says what it does.
Says it all
in
the tin. So, pros of this series is the original recipe. You have a black woman who speaks Swahili as the head of communications. She is one half of the first interracial kiss on television.
Hell yeah.
One that they didn't want to have done, wanted to cut back and forth, and for all of William Shatner's flaws, he made sure that he was twisting enough that you couldn't just cut from one thing to another. Anyway, a good story. They all wanted the interracial kiss to happen. You have a Japanese man at the helm, not too far from World War II, a Japanese man whose family wasn't in an internment camp, who is at the helm of this ship. You have a Russian kid on the bridge, which at the time was especially controversial. And you have a pointy-eared alien man who serves as a lovely analog for mixed ethnicity and autistic folks. When the writing is good, it's very, very good. It's episodic, so you can pick and choose what to watch without being too lost. The diversity on this show was so powerful that between, I believe, the second and third season, or might have been first and second, between two of the seasons, Nichelle Nichols was at a charity dinner, I believe it was the NAACP, and she was saying how she was probably going to quit doing the show she was doing. She was a mom, she was filming the show, she was working, she didn't actually get to sit down and watch the show she was on. She was just fucking busy at the time it came on. And that's when Martin Luther King Jr. leaned over and said, "You have to keep being on this show. Do you understand how important you are? You are a black woman on television who is not playing either someone's maid or a slave or the help in any capacity. Do you know how powerful you just being present on that bridge is?
Hell yeah. Wow.
You need to keep doing this." So she kept making the show. And then Nichelle Nichols actually went on to go help recruit women for NASA.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so this show has changed so much about culture, and it's big pros to this series. It's some of the most important television that's happened.
And a great example also, that story, in why representation is so important in general, right? Because a common thing that I see from idiots online is, you know, ugh, why does this game have to have so many queer people or women or whatever? Because it's important. Because those people are part of the world that we live in. And not everything is about white dudes.
Yeah, and like, great example, Whoopi Goldberg says she decided she wanted to be an actor as a kid because she saw Nichelle Nichols on Star Trek and saw that she could play someone who wasn't the help. So then fast forward to Star Trek The Next Generation, Whoopi Goldberg plays Guinan on Star Trek.
Oh, man. Her inner child must have been going nuts.
Yeah, yeah. Also, John Cho had said that seeing Sulu on the bridge was really important to him because he knew that he could be anyone. He could be on the bridge. He could be just as important.
Yeah. And, you know, honestly, when I think about media from the 60s, that time period, I cannot think of a single show or movie or anything. Not that I consume a whole ton of media from that era, but I can't think of anything that has nearly the level of representation that Star Trek has. Even an iota of it.
So some cons to the series. Like I said, a lot of the episodes just fucking suck. Some of it's rough.
Yeah.
Some of it's really rough to get through. It's also the 60s, so misogyny is still a prevalent issue in many of the episodes. It's also episodic, which is also one of the pros, but it's also one of the cons because it lacks a lot of character development and the overarching narrative of serialized shows, which for modern viewers, it can be kind of a deterrent because we are more accustomed to, as millennials at least, having TVs that have at least some storyline going through.
Right,
so like
right.
One of
some
my
continuity.
Other special one of my other special interest shows is Buffy, who did have a Monster of the Week, but that Monster of the Week also had something they also were working on fighting some overarching big bad for the series every episode. So it's it's a nice in between, which is one of my favorite ways to do it.
I used to use a term when I was doing DMing a lot where I would say there's the monster of the week and then there's the monster of the month.
Some additional notes. There are two pilot episodes. The first one is called The Cage and it features a different captain, Christopher Pike. When it first aired, the network told Roddenberry to lose the alien and the woman. The woman was the second in command, Majel Barrett Roddenberry. So rather than do that, he got a different captain. You switched to Captain Kirk. Spock was featured even more, and he said, "And I married the woman." So Majel Barrett Roddenberry was in every series of Trek until she died.
Hell yeah. Good for her.
What a babe. Also, if you get into Star Trek and someone says they hate Luxana Troi, which is a character that she played, it's a red flag. That's my expert opinion.
Just thinking, just the little that I know about Luxana, why would you hate Luxana?
Because she's an older woman in touch with her sexuality who doesn't take bullshit. Yeah.
That's awesome. That's
she's
amazing.
She's badass. I love her.
That's what I want to be when I get to be an old lady.
Yeah. Yeah. Such an absolute queen. Okay. Yeah. So we're moving forward in time. We're going to Star Trek The Next Generation. This, it's hard for me. I think this is my favorite one.
It's personally. Such quintessential Trek in my eyes. Like, when I think of Star Trek, this is the series that I think of. Even though I am a big fan of Deep Space Nine, ultimately, when I think Star Trek, I think of this series. I think of TNG.
And it has so many of my comfort characters. I think this is where the people working on Star Trek figured out that their strength really and truly lied in fleshing out the ensemble cast more. So you do get to meet the entire bridge crew on the original series, but you get way more characterization in TNG, which is something I like. So who should start here? This is a great point for people who want to start Star Trek early on in the franchise, but don't want to deal with the original series. Personally, I think this is the most autistic Star Trek series. I just do. That's my personal opinion.
Elaborate on that.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
If you like character-driven series, I think this is a wonderful choice. If you are a slut for the found family trope, I think this one is for you as well. If I were starting the franchise all over again and I had never watched Star Trek, I think I would choose TNG. So Star Trek The Next Generation, my summary, it is set exactly 95 years after the original series.
I didn't know that.
Yes, it follows the new crew of the Enterprise D, meaning it's the fifth Starship Enterprise, which is the flagship of the United Federation of Planets. This crew is led by Captain Jean-Luc Picard, Patrick Stewart, and they're also on continuing scientific missions, but with 100 years more knowledge than they had in the original series.
Yes, and a lot more technology.
Some pros to this series. The cast is just lovely. It's such a fucking good cast. You will find a comfort character. Minus Data. He's the best robot boy. I get to identify with the autistic-coded robot character. Others cannot call me the robot.
Yeah, that's important distinction there.
Yeah, it's the important distinction. And there's so much in this show, too, that is ahead of its time. There are episodes that explore gender identity and transness. There are episodes about disability. There are episodes about imperialism, which is a big theme. And the show, after season three at least, starts to stray away from being just strictly episodic a little bit and has some continuing narratives, but not to the degree that we're used to as a modern viewer. But they really start doing that in that series, which I think is why DS9 is as good as it is. Because that's the next series that happens, and I think they're finding their groove between being episodic and narrative.
Yeah, and I think, I'm sure you'll get to this, but by the nature of the literal setting of Deep Space Nine,
yes,
I think that requires character development because they are literally not moving.
They're not trekking anywhere. Yeah.
They're literally not trekking.
So in TNG, Picard is a better captain than Kirk. He just is. He's 100%. One of the best ones. He's my favorite one personally, I believe. But yeah, Kirk's a dog shit captain, and don't at me. I don't care. I will not be hearing arguments as to why you think he's not. Picard is diplomacy first, but if you're not willing to talk and work things out, he will kick your ass. Sometimes himself.
I have not even watched TNG. I know that Picard is a better captain.
Yeah.
Like, the few bits of Kirk that I have seen from the original series, like, the only reason that man is still alive is because he has plot armor. And genuinely, that is why. Picard is a fucking survivor and a strategist and a good person.
Yeah, just a good guy.
No contest.
Okay, so cons to this series... I will tell you the shortened version, but if you really want to know how fucked up things were the first few seasons, there's a documentary called Chaos on the Bridge that you should watch. When this show started, Gene Roddenberry, to put it nicely, was kind of losing it. He made a lot of decisions about how the writing would go that are just not conducive to good writing. They had a board in the writer's room of about 30 people who had been fired from the writer's room in those first three seasons. Because Roddenberry said, by the 24th century, there will be no interpersonal conflict.
Oh, I remember you telling me about this.
No one was allowed to write any interpersonal conflict because he thought we would be beyond that.
It's like, okay, beyond currency? Sure, yes, absolutely. Yeah. Beyond war? Yeah, sure, great, love it.
Interpersonal conflict?
Jinx.
Yeah, he also said we wouldn't have bald people in the 24th century, and Patrick Stewart almost didn't get the gig.
Sorry, I hadn't heard that before.
Funny to There's some really funny test shots of Patrick Stewart in a toupee that looks so fucking unnatural, like a cat walking on their hind legs and carrying a suitcase or something. It looks so fucking weird.
It's just baffling to me that Gene Roddenberry couldn't conceive that someone might just want to be bald.
Well, and I think the thing that changed it was, like, just how sexy a lot of the women were like, oh, don't you do anything to him. Oh, he's fine.
Right, right, exactly.
Yeah, don't do anything to him. Don't do anything to that man.
Yeah.
So he also would show up straight up just smoking a joint to set and be pretty fucking high and just be a mess to everyone. And TLDR, he fucked off to, I think, like, Fiji to go have his weird orgy Fiji hot tub party stuff, whatever he was up to. Which, yeah, pee a freak ass, you've earned it, but don't ruin the show.
Yeah, yeah.
Go do your freaky shit.
Yeah, don't mess up the show because of it.
Yeah, he would send them weird memos like, hey, this is what a Ferengi penis is like. This is what this race's mating is like. Humans with vaginas love a Ferengi penis because the way it's shaped hits just right. Like, weird notes like that. And I was like, dude, go do all the pervert shit you want and let them write the show. You've done enough, bud.
You've done enough.
You've done also, enough, man.
I just looked up the picture, the early test shot of Patrick Stewart wearing the wig. It's so unnatural.
It looks like so bad.
It's like a curly brown-gray wig that does not even seem to be on his head correctly.
No.
it's like they said, let's take the hair of Hercules from the Real Adventures of Hercules with Xena and just slap that limply onto Patrick Stewart's scalp.
Get it wet and toss it at his head.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, it looks like he's like a scrub daddy's eating him from the back of his head.
Of his head is an important prepositional phrase here. Scrub daddy's eating him from the back? Damn. I don't know they can do that. But anyway, that's the cons to this series. At the end of beginning of season three is when Gene Roddenberry fucks off. And then shortly thereafter, you get the Borg and some of the best, most compelling Star Trek.
Yeah, I remember seeing some of the Borg related things and being like, whoa, this is fucking gripping.
Yeah.
Like, this is some really interesting, like, crazy, like, what would you even do kind of situations, which I love that tension in a show. It's so hard to actually get that.
And they address so many people's trauma from the Borg after that and the conflict people have interpersonally about how they've handled the fight with the Borg. And it's way more interesting. But yeah, Gene should have retired, and the first couple of seasons of the show suffer because man should have retired. So now we're going to go on to Star Trek Deep Space Nine. Who should start here? Transgender people, I think.
Yeah, that works.
It's the most trans Star Trek, and Star Trek Discovery even has like a T for T young couple relationship. Yeah.
Hold on. I got to go Google some things real quick. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, it's real cute. It's like these sweet teens who are in love.
Oh, I love that.
But Star Trek Deep Space Nine, most transgender Star Trek, I would say the most queer of the pre-streaming shows. Now there are a bunch of openly queer characters in Star Trek. It's not a big deal. But of the pre-streaming shows, when they were not allowed to have a lot of openly queer shit, I would say DS9 is the gayest.
I agree. It's very gay.
This is where they also start getting deeper into serialized storytelling. So for folks who don't care for the Alien of the Week formula, this might be better. So as Violet said, this is a Star Trek where they're not going anywhere. They're not trekking anywhere.
Yeah.
My brief summary, Commander Benjamin Sisko is given command of an alien space station once run by a militaristic reptile race called the Cardassians. Him, along with his Bajoran second-in-command, who's Major Kira, Violet's favorite, Bajoran second-in-command, who are the people the Cardassians committed a genocide against, must help run this space station that sits at the mouth of an intergalactic wormhole. Benjamin is told early on by the godlike alien beings that inhabit the wormhole that he is their emissary. TLDR, he starts a new job, and aliens suddenly tell him he is Space Jesus.
And that's very early on, too.
That's first, like, first episode shit. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know if it's a first episode, but it's like
second,
like the first few, like
first
honestly.
Three. Yeah, it's set up. Yeah, he gets told like, I have a new job, move to this new space station. I'm Space Jesus.
Yeah. Wait. What? It at first it seems like what the fuck is going on, but then it very quickly goes, okay, yeah, this suddenly just feels like it makes a lot more sense quickly.
Pros to this series. Captain Sisko, spoilers, he becomes a captain. It's not the biggest in the world. Captain Sisko is the first black lead of a Trek series. He is also a widower and a single father. And the previous two captains often said that having a family wasn't conducive to command. And Sisko proves them wrong. He commands Deep Space Nine with, I would say, wisdom, tenacity, and extremely clever problem solving, all while being an incredible father who tries to get home in time to make a home-cooked meal for his son, even though a replicator can make him something perfectly good. He wants to go home to his son, Jake, and physically show him through physically cooking the thing, Jake, I love you. Let's have this meal together.
Yeah. That was one of my favorite things about Sisko. When I realized that he was doing that, I was like, that's so fucking cool. Like, yeah. In a world where you can literally just press a button and it creates whatever you want food-wise, you are cooking. Yeah. That's badass.
So he wants to go home, make a meal for his son, Jake, sit down, talk to him about his day. And I personally feel like Captain Sisko is the epitome of the phrase, do no harm, take no shit.
Yeah, that's very fitting. Yes. Once again, you're correct.
Yeah. He is a kind, gentle man, understanding, empathetic. But the minute you cross someone he cares about, he will end you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
So I love Captain Sisko. It's also just a lovely ensemble cast. This show makes one of my favorite characters somehow the little capitalistic goblin man who runs the bar. The hyper-capitalist goblin man, Quark, who runs the bar and who is just the antithesis of everything I believe in, they make me love him. There's so many good characters in this ensemble, and you do get a lot of time with them because they're on a space station. They're not going anywhere. So when they do have their overarching storylines, but they also do have, oh, hey, this person docked on the space station. What's going on here? These people are coming to the space station. What's happening here? So rather than going to the aliens are coming to them.
Yeah, I really like the diversity that it shows early on in the show and how you are constantly being introduced to new characters and new species of aliens and things in the bar. And I think that's why Quark, despite being such a hyper-capitalist little shit, is such a lovable character, because it's his bar. And so even though, yes, he comes from a species that is hyper-capitalist and does a lot of really shitty things, it's like they're almost like parodying capitalism in a way.
That's 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're showing that beneath the greed, Quark is still a person, and that's why he belongs here too. Because he does so many things where he's like, well, I shouldn't do this, but it's the right thing to do. And he doesn't say that, but he doesn't say it.
He doesn't ever say it. And that's why one of my pros is that it explores themes of queerness, identity, and killing the capitalist in your head. Because one of the reasons I like Quark is very often he realizes the way I was raised to be is at odds with the thing I feel I need to do right now. So I'm going to do the thing that doesn't get me profit. His problem is that he does no self-reflection on that.
Yeah, exactly. I think sometimes he does those things that are like, this was the right thing to do, the anti-capitalist thing to do. And then we'll like, it seems like he comes up with an excuse later as to why.
I did it because technically I would profit more if I did this in the long run. Everyone's like, okay, sure, Quark.
Yeah, but I'm playing the long game.
Okay, sure, man.
Yeah, which is like this. That's such an interesting character trope to me, to have the character that's like a real piece of shit except when it really counts.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So Deep Space Nine is great. Cons to this series: if you like them trekking places, there's very little trekking here. This show, as well as Voyager, has a man on the production team named Rick Berman, who was a raging homophobe and a misogynist. So there are many things in this show that he has twisted or didn't allow to happen, or they tried to have happen, or just kind of, there's not a whole lot that feels just kind of gross, but just some plot stuff doesn't make sense because he had his grimy little fingers all over it. So there are two characters in this show who, one is a doctor who is an ADHD twink, and one is a lizard man who is a tailor. They were both playing their characters like they were gay for each other.
Yes.
Because they were. There's nothing about the way they're written that's straight, nothing at all. Rick Berman hated it so much, he introduced a female love interest for the lizard man. And it felt so unnatural because this queen this queen ain't interested in ladies.
Right.
So it's since been retconned where it's like, no, it was gay. But yeah, Rick Berman fucks up a lot of the very potentially good things that could have happened in addition to the other good things in DS9.
Yeah. And I will say, it's Bashir and I forget the other character's
Garrick.
Name. Garrick. Bashir and Garrick. I feel like despite Berman's influence, there is still an undeniable queer tension between the two.
Oh, yeah. Because they constantly. both said, we're playing this like we're gay and in love, right? Okay. So they both deliberately did it anyway.
Yeah. So if you're worried like, oh, there's not going to be any of that. Oh, there is.
Oh, there is. Just,
it's not overt, unfortunately.
And then later in Lower Decks, they make it canon.
I love that.
Yeah. Okay. So now we're going to move on to Star Trek Voyager. Who should start here? I think the series feels the most sapphic. I will not elaborate. This is the first female captain. It's Captain Catherine Janeway. And there's an episode where she's fighting a giant virus in a tank top that I feel like is very formative to my bisexuality.
I think this is probably going to be the series that I watch after I finally finish Deep Space Nine because of what you're describing right now.
Yes. Yes. So, summary. The USS Voyager is suddenly flung into the gamma quadrant of space, leaving them what they expect to be a 75-year journey back home. So they are an alien thing, flings them in the far reaches of space, far, far, farther than any humans have gone before. They're in their ship, which is a new type of ship for the Federation. It's got really cool, like, semi-biological circuitry stuff in there, which presents its own benefits and problems. But Captain Catherine Janeway is in charge of this mission, and she does everything she can to bring her crew back home safely. And in the spirit of Starfleet, she says, well, we're still going to do our mission on the way. So they do what they can, explore new life and new civilizations, and they pick up some fun aliens that join the found family. Again, found family trope is big in Star Trek, and I feel like Voyager does this a lot. So some pros to this series. It gets even deeper into the serialized storytelling because the whole thing is they need to get closer and closer to home.
It is one singular trek, really.
It is one singular trek back home. And there are some episodes where they're arguing about, do we do this and get ourselves further home? But this might also screw over these alien people if we try to do that. What is the right thing to do? How do we make these choices? This show also has, I believe, my favorite doctor, because every Star Trek show has a doctor. It also has Seven of Nine, who is a former Borg drone, who that woman was put through hell on that set, especially with her costume that was so tight they had a medical staff on hand just for if she passed out, and she couldn't sit or bend over. She gets to come back in Star Trek Picard and wear like cargo pants and sweaters and be bisexual.
Vindication.
So yeah, I was so pleased. But a badass. I love this series. This is the one that I actually have solid memories of watching as it came out with my grandma. The series started in 1995, and I have very clear memories of sitting down to watch the new episode of Star Trek Voyager. It has aliens you don't see in other Star Trek series because they're in the ass end of the galaxy.
Oh, yeah. That's
you
really
see,
cool.
You see weird shit that you haven't seen before. They even run into something from a different dimension. So this is the first time you get, hey, this is a different dimensional creature who lives in this like negative space thing in a dimension past ours time and space.
His name is SpongeBob SquarePants. No, I'm just kidding.
Exactly. You've seen it. Some of the cons to this series. Rick Berman is one of the cons to this series. One of the reasons they brought in Seven of Nine is because he thought the show needed more sex appeal, as if Captain Janeway wasn't hot and talking to you in this kind of a voice the whole time.
I mean, that would do it for me.
Yeah, it does it for me. It does it for me well and good. Yeah. I love Seven of Nine, but that's why they did her dirty. And the other thing, they did not do their research when they were looking for a consultant for their indigenous character. A guy who is now famous for being a grifter and not actually indigenous consulted them for this character.
Oh, no. I didn't know about this.
Yeah. Yeah. So, oh, of the Native American stuff in that show is just pulled out of some guy's ass. And yeah, it's not good.
That really sucks. That's a big con.
That's some of the cons to the series. So next, we're going to take a quick stop at Star Trek Enterprise. This is a prequel show. Who should start here? This is only appropriate for freaks who want to watch things in the show's universe's chronology. This is not in release order. This is a prequel series that came out in 2001. So this is before Kirk and Spock on the Enterprise. This is before we actually had a United Federation of Planets. This is when it was just Earth doing the exploring. So if you want to figure out in the show's chronology what to watch first, this is technically the earliest Star Trek, kind of. So the summary, the very first Enterprise sets out into space and the United Federation of Planets does not yet exist. It's less diverse, with the only aliens on the ship being the ship's doctor and a Vulcan science officer. And of course, the Vulcan science officer is in a skin-tight cat suit the whole time and not a regular Starfleet uniform. Some pros to this series. Not a lot. I'm not going to lie to you. There's a cool dog named Porthos. T'Pol is beautiful, the Vulcan science officer. Trip is beautiful. He's their engineer, and I'm a bisexual. That is all. Cons to this series. I got in trouble as a kid running up our telephone bill, arguing with people in their 30s about why Captain Archer is the worst captain in Starfleet on Star Trek forums. So I have been yelling about this for a very long time. Archer's the worst captain possible. Is he played by Scott Bakula, who seems pretty chill? Yes. Could Scott Bakula be a better captain if they wrote him better content? Yeah, he could. The show aired just a couple of weeks after 9/11.
Oh.
And then you can totally tell in seasons 2 through 4 that this is a post 9/11 piece of American media, because it does not fit the ethos of Star Trek at all. And there are so many times where Archer fucks over some alien planet for the benefit of his crew that just wouldn't happen in the other shows. Just wouldn't.
Yeah, that's really frustrating. At the time, well, I was young enough, right, that I didn't really follow a whole lot of this media, but like it didn't start occurring to me until really Brienne started pointing it out to me how many things were just made really shitty by 9/11.
Yeah, like so xenophobic. Like, yeah,
like music and movies and TV shows, everything just got way fucking worse after 9/11.
So yeah, as far as Star Trek TV shows, those are starting points. I'm going to offer a couple of movies as potential starting points as well here real quick. Star Trek First Contact. So technically, this goes even earlier than Star Trek Enterprise. This is a movie. If you want to start from where you can see the birth of Starfleet, this is the movie I would start with. So this has the Next Generation crew. So you get that found family stuff. This movie happened after the Next Generation TV show was long finished. Summary of the film. The cast of Star Trek The Next Generation has to go into the past to help make sure Zefram Cochrane, the guy who invents the warp drive, invents it. Because inventing warp drive is the technology that Vulcans decide a planet needs before they will make first contact. So they are in a race against time with the Borg to make sure that humans develop the warp drive and have a good first contact with the Vulcans.
I think I watched this movie with you and James at one point, and probably. I remember it being quite good.
Yeah, it's very good. Pros to this movie? It's just a lot of fucking fun. It's really fun. You get the established next-gen cast. You get time travel. It's funny. You don't need a hell of a lot of backstory to appreciate it.
Yeah, I remember the costumes being very good also.
Costuming was great. It's a really good intro into Star Trek for those who might be intimidated by the idea of starting a series. Some cons to this movie. I really think just a little bit of backstory on relationship stuff that you might lose. But I don't think it's that major. Like, they wanted to make this something that people could jump in on, I think, even if they hadn't watched the whole show. The very last thing I will recommend, if you want to start with a movie, this will be controversial. Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home. Many people call it the one with the whales.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Now that I think I may have seen this one with my dad many, many years ago.
Of all of the Star Trek movies, this is my favorite one. Hands down, my favorite Star Trek movie. I think this is great for folks who want to get into the original series but don't want to slog through all the fucking shitty episodes. Also great for nature nerds and environmentalists. So this movie came out in 1986. This was the height of the whole Save the Whales campaign, which worked so well. We fucking did, man. Like, we fucking did. Oh, yeah. It worked really well. So this one, it sounds whack as hell, but hang with me. It's my favorite Trek movie. An alien probe shows up in the 23rd century. It is trying to contact humpback whales. It is explained in the movie. I'm not going into detail. But in the 23rd century, humpback whales are extinct. So if the probe doesn't get a response in time, the Earth is in actual danger.
Oh, shit.
So the original series gang travels back to 1986 to go get some fucking whales to bring back the call.
Amazing. That's a really good... I think when I watched it, I was too young to understand the plot. But, like, this is a good setup. I like it.
It's Save the Whales. Yeah.
Hell yeah.
This one, directed by Leonard Nimoy, who actually really give a shit about saving the whales and nature. It's got whales. For some reason, it's got the mom from Seventh Heaven, if that does anything for you. It was nominated for 4 Academy Awards, including one for cinematography, which it very much deserved.
Yeah, I have some very distinct memories of, like scenes from this movie in my head of, like, Scotty and a few other people, like, in a quote-unquote modern-day, like, 80s
hospital.
Downtown scene.
Oh, downtown? Yeah,
hospital.
It's all in San Francisco.
Yeah.
So it's, like, 1986 San Francisco.
And they're, like...
Yeah.
They're like, they look so out of place wearing these Star Trek costumes just in a random ass city in the 80s.
Yeah. So it's so fucking fun. Some cons to this series. It is the 4th Star Trek film, and the previous ones actually have an ongoing story. You will miss some details, but honestly, I think they just assumed not everyone would have watched the first 3, and it's not like you would have been able to just easily catch back up on them at that point in time. So the movie is still enjoyable without that background info, although you will miss some details. So in the first 3 movies, Spock dies and comes back to life like Jesus at some point. It's mentioned, but you don't really have to know that to enjoy the movie. But yes, those are my objectively correct takes on where to start watching Star Trek. I think it's great.
I can confirm. You are correct. I'm getting a live feed right now from the audience. The audience is nodding. They're all saying, yes, Brianne is correct.
Yes,
you're getting
I am correct.
Thumbs up from everyone. If you're listening right now and you're saying, no, Brianne is not correct about something, you're listening to the wrong podcast.
Go back to clown school, dork.
Go back to clown school, nerd.
Go back to fucking clown school, dork. But yeah, I think everyone should give Star Trek a try. I think if you're autistic, you especially should, because there's so much where I feel seen. And I think there's a reason that I latched onto it from a young age. It's lovely. And I think you should get into Star Trek, and then we can talk about Star Trek. And Star Trek is great. And I love Star Trek.
And if you're like me and you like autistic people, knowing about Star Trek is a really good way to pick
up
autistic hotties.
Man, if you're trolling for some autistic ass, it's a safe thing to have some knowledge in. Not saying every autistic person likes Star Trek, but there's a reasonable chance.
Alternatively, if you meet an autistic person and go, I've never watched any Star Trek, would you like to watch it with me? Bro.
Yeah.
Just take your pants off right then.
Right then and there. Just take them off. But yeah, it's my only 2nd episode talking about Star Trek. I feel like I've practiced a lot of restraint.
You're so restrained. So demure.
Yes, I practiced so much restraint with this. But now I kind
of... I'm so proud of you.
But now I do want to go watch the one with the whales, I think.
Yeah, I want to go save the whales too.
Let's go watch the one with the whales. Friends, I'm here with the housekeeping section. First, I'd like to thank our Patreon supporters, like Nana Nussbaum, Jennifer Bosch, Patch, Harleen, Bethany, Laura Kramer, Lilith Rain, Janice Weston, Anarchista, Percy, Nanya B, Kate Michigus, K Genius, Dave Perrell, Megan E, Carl Brooks, Natasha Neves, Lutzi, Helen Clifford, Sewing Sarah, Rachel Rachelson, Fintago, and Randy Lovings. You know the drill. If you want to help the show, you can tell other people about the show, wherever you might hang out on the internet, be that Tumblr, Discord, Reddit, some weird, obscure forum for, you know, I don't know, neat forks. That's where we find our people, honestly, is a forum about forks, probably. Anywhere you think someone might appreciate this show, please share it with them. We don't take paid ads. We don't pay for advertising. We grow entirely by word of mouth. And that is where you all can help us the most. So the more people you can tell about the show and promote the show to, the more it helps us, the more Patreon supporters we get, like the lovely list of people I just listed to you earlier. And the more cool stuff we get to do, the more we get to upgrade people's equipment and software. It all helps us keep making the shows we make. Additionally, if you can leave a comment, like, rating, review, whatever your podcatcher of choice supports, if you can interact with us, you know, the most possible, that helps us out. That helps us get more action in those algorithms and more activity, and it can help InfoDumpies get recommended to people who might like similar stuff. So that's another way you can help us out. If you're in a place to help us out monetarily, you can find a link to the Mixnomer Patreon page in the show details. Tiers start at just $1. You get our notes, mine and Violet's, for every episode we do where we list our sources and you can go on deeper dives into the topics we talk about. You get stuff for our audio drama shows. You get stuff for everything. So if you're in a place to help us out and you want to throw a little money our way, the link to the Patreon is in the show details. Additionally, if you want to hang out with us and have a great time with a bunch of people who love info dumping about cool things, you can find a link to the Discord server in the show details. I've said it before, I'll say it again, the absolute sweetest people in the world are in our Discord server, and I am continually flabbergasted at the absolutely kind people that our stuff seems to attract. I love the Discord server, so even if you just want to lurk and see what some people are talking about, we welcome all levels of participation because most of us are autistic and there's no expectation that you even pipe in at all. So if you want to, you know, parallel play, if you want to come hang out in the Discord server, a link to that is in the show details. But that's all I've got for you this time, my friends. Until next time, clever sign off.